Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
You're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up this week, we finally have details of the iPhone 12. John Riley of TheEffect.net will join me shortly to talk through all you need to know. Plus, have you ever fancied hosting your own podcast? We'll have the ultimate guide on how to host a podcast like a radio presenter with DJ Stephen Cooper. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. There is really only one story in town when it comes to tech this week, and that is the four new iPhones. Many people, myself included, sat down on Tuesday evening to watch Tim Cook and his colleagues in a highly produced, utterly beautiful and very impressive unveiling ceremony. It was different to usual because of COVID, obviously enough. And what I was watching it, and I'll talk to John about it in a second, but when I was watching it, I was struck by how much smoother it all ran because it was pre-recorded. It was obviously pre-recorded. And they were able to do things like embrace augmented reality, very, very slick demos. The whole thing flowed that bit easier. There wasn't any of those kind of awky momos of, you know, a phone not working when it was meant to work or whatever. I was highly impressed by it. So we now have four new iPhones. The first device unveiled at the press conference to those who watched it was the HomePod Mini, which is their version of Amazon's Echo or Google Home or whatever you're having yourself. And unfortunately, that won't be available in Ireland. We'll talk to John very shortly as to why that is. But before we jump into this week's show, I wanted to ask, if you run or work for a small business, a small or medium Irish business that is within the tech space, whether it is tech product, tech accessories, techie type gifts, whatever, will you please email techtalk@newstalk.com and tell me a bit about your business, because I would love to feature you over the coming weeks. As we approach the festive season, there will be a lot of people looking to support local businesses, and I would love to give you a shout out on the show, perhaps even feature you on the show, but I can only do that if I know about you. So the email address is techtalk@newstalk.com. Tell me a bit about your business, what it is that you do, and how I can get onto you and hopefully have you on the show in the near future. That would be fantastic. But go back to iPhone now. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net. John, let's jump right in. It was a very, very impressive event. We have four new iPhones.
Yeah, it's quite the play by Apple. They finally entered the 5G battle. And yeah, the fact that all four phones that were announced at the event I've been, you know, using the new 5G networks is quite the play. As I said, it's going to be the turning point, like is the case usually when Apple enters the market or enters the industry with their own take on something. It's going to drive everyone else along. Mm-hmm. We know that other manufacturers have been making 5G handsets for almost a few years now, with the likes of Huawei kind of getting out their first here in Ireland anyways. But now with Apple kind of capitalizing on Vodafone, Air's, Three Ireland's 5G networks, I think it's going to really drive everything forward.
I watched the full event, and we'll talk through it because obviously not everybody would have watched it. And it's quite the spectacle. These Apple events usually are a big deal. They usually fly journalists from around the world over to their HQ, but obviously because of COVID that didn't happen. And what they put out there instead was this beautiful, like probably the best event launch I think I have sat through, and I have sat through a lot of them at this stage. I thought it was really well done. It was very polished. It dragged on a little bit towards the end, but you can't really fault them when it comes to throwing money at these type of things.
No, not at all. And you say it dragged on, but I think looking at Twitter, it surprisingly was meant to be one of the shortest Apple events or iPhone events ever. Over the course of the years. So
I think that's probably because they broke it up, though, because they had done an event earlier in September. They kind of got away. They got a lot of their sort of corporate-y bits and pieces done in that event. And this one was very much, here's the product, here's why it's deadly, thank you and good night, which I am all for. Before we talk about the iPhone in depth, they unveiled the HomePod Mini, which looks class, but unfortunately it's not going to be available here in Ireland. Do we know why that is? This is their smart speaker, for anyone who doesn't know. It's kind of their Siri-enabled smart speaker, similar to the Google Home Nest and the Amazon Echo.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I don't really know why either. They never really launched the original HomePod here in Ireland. I think if you were going through the airport in Currys or one of those Dixon stores, you might have had a bit of luck. But for some reason, it just wasn't available on the Irish store. And it seems to be the same case for this smaller version. Coming in at €99, which I was like, that was probably the biggest shock for me watching the event, going, God, Apple have actually competitively priced one of their products, because it puts it right on par with Google's new Nest audio speaker. So it's a shame it's not coming, but I just don't understand. But I don't know if you spotted it yourself while you were watching the event. They quite large omission in terms of supported streaming services for the device, that there is no Spotify support. They're obviously going to be pushing their own Apple Music, but I think the two companies had quite the tiff a couple of months ago about the way Apple was getting to promote its own streaming service on, and then Spotify were being charged to have their app on the App Store. So they did Spotify came out with a campaign to say it's not fair, and I guess that's still going on because there was no mention of Spotify whatsoever to be able to use this new speaker. So that's quite a hurdle for them to cross.
It really is. And it's funny because this feeds back into the wider conversation of how big and powerful the big and powerful tech companies really are. And if it's fair to the consumer for this sort of business spat to get in the way of us using services that we're all paying for. But unfortunately, as we said, it's not coming to Ireland. So as class as it looks, and there was one feature that really caught my eye, and we'll stop talking about it then, but the intercom thing, which is a great name, as Irish company Intercom will tell you. But the intercom thing, which allows you, if you have these different devices around your home, or if everyone in your home has an iPhone or even the AirPods, you can say, tell John we're late. And then my voice message would play out either on your phone or in your AirPods. And it's kind of like a walkie-talkie system, but it's very, very slick. And I can see more and more of that coming down the line. Now, obviously, if you live in a one-bed apartment like me, you can just roar at whoever you're trying to target. But for I thought it was a really interesting concept. It was a clever use of the technology. So I'd say we can all be on the edge of our seat to see what Google and Amazon's answer to that is. But let's turn to the iPhones. So iPhone 12, we have iPhone 12, 12 mini, 12 Pro and 12 Pro Max. There was a lot of speculation that we would get four. Was it the four that you thought we were going to get?
Yeah, I guess from kind of keeping a track of, you know, various Apple leakers and people tweeting over the last couple of months about what was coming. I don't know if you know John Prosser. He's one of the largest kind of Apple leakers on Twitter. And he's been kind of getting it pretty spot on over the last couple of months, even down to the point that in terms of availability, we're only kind of looking at the 12 and 12 Pro this coming Friday, today, that we'll be able to get our pre-orders in. But the mini, the smallest little iPhone that was announced, and the Pro Max being delayed by about a month, I think, before they're up for pre-order. Just I think there's been delays in terms of productions and with COVID and everything that they're not all going to be available at the same date. But yeah, I think these were all somewhat expected, with the mini being the bit of the curveball for this year, being such a small little tiny phone. I could be seen to be replaced the iPhone SE for people that just finally have to let go of the home button and get used to this, to the face unlock and whatnot.
Yeah, there was a lot of talk about the design, and I have to say I bloody love it. I much prefer the boxy design rather than the sleek design. I think it sits better in the hand. It is very similar to the iPhone 5. I lost count of the amount of people saying that to me on Twitter, and I was like, yeah, I know. But it is a beautiful looking device. I think that they have pushed themselves. They also said that it's going to have more 5G bands than any other smartphone out there, which is going to be very important. It's not so important right now, but as 5G spreads across the country and indeed the world, that will matter. So let's talk through the difference. We'll talk through, because we'll kind of pair them up. So there's the iPhone 12 mini and the iPhone 12. So what are the key differences there?
So I guess they're very, very similar phones, apart from the physical kind of dimensions, with the iPhone kind of mini coming in at just 5.4 inches, which is a very small display in the hand, given that it's just all screen, really. But in comparison, then that's actually still a larger screen than the likes of people are used to in the iPhone 7 or the iPhone 8. Mm. So you're getting more screen on a smaller phone, which is great, really. But then with the iPhone 12 itself goes up to 6.1 inch. So they've managed to make the screen slightly larger than last year's iPhone 11.
Yeah.
Other than that, then you're really getting the exact same device, which is pretty impressive.
That's what I liked, though. Yeah, because I know so many people who are fed up having big phones. Like, I think the novelty of having a big phone is kind of worn off for some. Yes, it's nice if you are watching content on the go, but because we're not really going anywhere at the moment, that's not the biggest concern. I think they marketed it very well in the event on Tuesday night by saying that, you know, exact same features, you're not compromising on any features except screen size, and it'll fit easier into your back pocket, into your bag, whatever you're having yourself. And I think that is that will appeal to a lot of people. It's also a bit cheaper as well.
Yeah, so it's just coming in at €815.50 for the iPhone 12 mini, with people wanting to kind of go with the iPhone 12, which is the kind of obviously the direct successor to last year's 11 model, coming in at a bit more expensive at €913.85. And these odd variations in the pricings to do with the VAT reduction here in Ireland. Mm. So they're kind of rounding, well, not even rounding them up to any certain number. It's almost an exact kind of reduction in line with the VAT numbers. So it's a bit odd, but you're getting them for a little bit less than you usually would be paying.
Yeah, I also like that they've kept them below the €1,000 mark, because there was a few years ago there where if you wanted the new iPhone, you were paying between €1,000 and €1,300. So I do think, although we could, like, you can't say any iPhone is cheap, even the iPhone SE is still €400 thereabouts. Yep. But they are coming down in price. And that, as a tech fan, I think is a really smart move by Apple.
Yeah, no, definitely. And like, if people don't want to jump onto the latest and greatest that's been announced, you know, last year's iPhone 11 is still a fantastic phone, and that's been reduced down to just €697, I think. So less than €700 for, I know it's a year old technically, but it's still a fantastic phone. So, you know, they are finally getting themselves into competitive pricing territory. It should go up against the likes of Google, Samsung's mid-range handsets, OnePlus and the like. So it's good to see for consumers that they've got this choice, and they know that they need to have this kind of price differences for everyone with what's going on, and people's price, you know, ability to pay over €1,000 mightn't be there as it used to be. So it's good to see.
Mm. Then we move up to the Pro and the Pro Max. And I have to be honest, and you know this because we've been talking tech together for 3 or 4 years now. Yeah. When they start going into how class the camera is, they could literally just say the camera is class, and I'd be like, okay, yes, it is. But showing 45 different videos of different things, it just lost me. And I know that I should be more into it as a tech journalist, but I approach everything as a tech fan more so. And I don't know, like, is there anything more to say other than the camera is class?
Yeah.
Well, go on, go on. I dare you to try.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to give out about them, because like we just praised them for the iPhone 12 mini and the 12 being basically the same phone, but different screen size. Whereas now with the iPhone 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max, there's variances in the capabilities of the cameras, which isn't great for consumers that don't want to have the massive 6.7 inch iPhone 12 Pro Max. They'd like to keep it at 6.1 inch and still get all the camera credentials, but they're not, unfortunately. The camera has been upped or been kind of improved on the larger model over the smaller display. So that's not ideal for consumers that want to kind of have everything, but not on the huge, huge display.
So would you prefer if the Pro and the Pro Max were just exactly the same phone, with the Max being that whopper screen?
Yeah, because it gives people, you know, being a tech, you know, addict and wanting to have the best of the best, I would have to push for the Pro Max to make sure I'm getting the best camera Apple's ever put in a phone, even though it might be too big for most consumers' hands or most consumers' use scenarios. So it's a bit of an annoyance. They kind of claim that due to the larger screen, they were able to fit in more tech, which could be true, but I call it bullshit. Mm. Just to kind of push people to the larger handsets. It's not, you know, yes, the like you said, you shut off when they start going into the 45 videos. Like they claim it's the first phone in the world to be able to record in Dolby Vision, which is quite the claim for any videographer listening or anyone that does any sort of video production, to hear a portable device as small as an iPhone being able to capture and edit on the phone in Dolby Vision, which basically is the latest and greatest video capturing technology available right now, is really quite the feat. And that's kind of to go with the fact they have the A14 Bionic chip, which is just bananas. Like, it's complete not overkill a processor, but it'll get the job done for those people that are using their phones for actual video production. But for most users, it's complete not overkill.
And what about the standard point and shoot camera? That did look impressive, even on the Pro version.
Yeah, no, they've got the triple camera set up like they did on last year's 11 Pro and 11 Pro Max. So you've got your 12 megapixel kind of main camera sensor. You've got your optical zoom sensor with 2x optical zoom, which is still playing somewhat of catch up with the likes of Samsung and even Huawei. So they did claim, you know, that there was a 4x optical zoom range. So you have to be careful of the terminology there, because it makes you believe that it's a 4x optical zoom when it's actually just the word range is slotted in there to be very clever. It's not actually 4x optical. It's just 2. So just people to be aware of that. They showed off the fact you're going to be letting in more light. They've got kind of faster apertures, so the light is going to be much, much better for low light photography and even low light video. So all around, yes, you're definitely going to be getting a better camera. But is it worth the upgrade from last year's model? I'm not sure.
That's what a few of the diehard Apple fans that I know, and they're usually the first ones to pre-order and so on. They were kind of messaging me on Tuesday night going, I'm not sure that there's enough for me to upgrade just yet. They're wondering, should they hold out for the iPhone 13 or whatever it will be called when there's more 5G coverage around the country and maybe the technology has advanced a bit more?
Well, that's a very good point. The fact that yes, it's great to see them enter the 5G market, and they could be somewhat slow to the race, but there's still manufacturers launching 4G models of their 5G variants, so that they're giving people that choice to get a cheaper models so that they're not priced out of the market. But yes, look, Apple's doubled down on everything here. All 4 handsets announced are 5G. But I think from a personal perspective, people could, if they have the 11, they really should wait for next year. Like, you know, there was a lot of talk online about 120Hz displays. And I don't know in terms of how fast the screen refreshes and how smooth it looks. But when you're just using it day to day, like the Samsung Galaxy Note 20 and the S20 Ultras have this really fast refresh rate that just looks really, really kind of slick. But there's no word of that on these new Pro Max models. So people are kind of a bit miffed that, you know, they're calling these like the latest and greatest, and they still can't compete in terms of screen technology with the likes of Samsung. So I would like to think next year is when we can see this technology enter the handsets, and you're really going to get a pro experience on your device.
I would love to hear if you are planning to upgrade or if you're going to hold out. Do let me know. techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. And you're listening to John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, talking about that Apple event which took place on Tuesday. John, another thing that was quite interesting is that they are not going to include the charger plug and the headphones. And that's because they're saying that there's millions and millions of the plugs and the headphones lying around the world. And as part of their environmental efforts, they're not going to give them to new customers. What do you make of that?
Oh, it's kind of like, if you give out about it, you look like you're against the environment almost in a weird kind of backfiry way. Like, they claim there's 700 million lightning port connected headphones, of basically the little Apple headphones that used to come with the phones, and that there's like 2 billion charger adapters. So as you said, they're not coming in the boxes, and you're going to have to buy them. You will get the cable, but you won't get the actual charger block that you're used to getting. Yes, I agree with them to a certain point, that, you know, people are buying these phones all the time and they're just kind of almost just taking the phone out of the box and just fecking the actual box with the charger and the cable in the corner, because they already have a charger plugged in. So it's probably the right step. You know, it's unfortunate that it's Apple doing it, because they always seem to be the ones that are kind of, inverted commas, screwing consumers over for their own benefit and gain, that need to buy their plugs now and buy their headphones if they need them. But in the long run, I think it's a good call.
Yeah, I think so as well. I hope that customers go and either use the proper plug that comes with it, because as I mentioned on News Talk Breakfast on Wednesday morning, you know, not every plug has the right wattage to be able to charge a phone. If you use the wrong one, or, you know, you want to make sure people are doing the right thing so that they're not screwing over the device that they've just paid close to $1,000 or more for. That would be my only thought on it. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the gaming offering that is now going to be on the new iPhone 12. Plus, we will talk briefly about FIFA 21. Stay with us.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. And John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is still with me, and we are talking about the Apple event that took place on Tuesday evening. Are you queuing up to buy the new phone? Are you going to be excited and delighted when it arrives? Or are you going to hold out for next year's model? John, they had sort of guest speakers on talking about the gaming capabilities of the phone, which will now be possible thanks to 5G. Did that pique your interest?
Well, it's just interesting to see the partnerships that they're actually going down. Like, they mentioned League of Legends Wild Rift, which, for people that don't know, is one of the biggest kind of mobile games in the world. It's absolutely massive. And it's been on Android already, but this is the first time it's actually coming to iOS devices, and kind of with the preference on the iPhone 12, given its 5G connectivity and its super duper A14 Bionic chip. So, you know, for people that are into this competitive kind of RPG stuff, it's a huge win. You know, if you are an iOS user or an iPhone user, you're going to want to really pick up this new handset to play it at its best. But it's kind of a slight dig to the likes of Fortnite, which, I don't know if you're aware, they're in a big court case battle with Apple, the company behind Fortnite, because they're sick of being charged to be on the App Store, and they want to be able to kind of charged directly through their own app, and Apple just kicked them off the App Store. So there's a lot of backing over there. But this is the way Apple are positioning themselves now when it comes to gaming, and it's quite an interesting one. And to have the likes of League of Legends on site is a big coup, basically.
Yeah, again, and I mentioned it in the first part of the show. You know, it's another example of Apple flexing their muscles, and I get it because they're a business, but they're also a business worth billions, and it just feels like they're kind of pushing the consumer in a certain way. And I know that that's what technology does at its core, so nobody needs to tell me, but I'm just not sure that I'm wild about it. And I also wonder, you know, what that does to the wider gaming industry at a time when a lot of consumers are struggling financially, when a lot of businesses are struggling financially, and when a lot of, you know, creatives who work in the gaming industry are potentially going to find themselves in a very awkward spot the longer this COVID thing goes on. So I really do hope that they come to some sort of sound resolution. You know, it's wider than just Apple, and I'm not having a go at them. I know that not everyone in the tech space is a saint. I know there are very few saints. But even, you know, I set up a new device in my home the other day, and I signed into all my different streaming services. So I had my Spotify, my Google Music, all of these different subscription services that I'm paying for.
Yeah.
And then you're buying another device to be able to allow you to access them, but then there's other things that you can't access. And you just wonder, at what stage are we, the consumer, being screwed here?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. When these kind of like large scale, multi-billion dollar kind of court cases are being battled, it's kind of like, not even David v. Goliath, it's Goliath v. Goliath, where we, the consumers, are the Davids that just can't get a win, unfortunately, whilst these court cases are going on. So iPhone users that kind of haven't access to Fortnite now, or they didn't have the app on their phone to begin with, can't download it through the App Store anymore. So we are, you know, gamers out there are losing out because of this kind of legalities and kind of court cases that are going on. So it's not a good look for the industry when the big players like this are kind of throwing their weight around, and we, the consumers, are losing out. So they really need to kind of come to some sort of amicable, you know, agreement for the greater good, really, rather than just for the bottom lines. But as you said, they're businesses, and they have to kind of not to be seen to be pushovers either. So it's the interesting take, or it's an interesting turn.
The
way things are going.
I really do hope that we, the consumer, just don't. We're not kind of the collateral damage, which we will be, but I'd love to think that at some stage they sit up and take stock of what matters. And, you know, if you're not a sound brand, or if you're not, you know, respectful of people and their needs as you do business, I think a turning point will come. We've seen it with some of the social media companies. We're seeing it with different businesses. Like, even this year, I had to note the usual hoo-ha about Amazon Prime Day wasn't there, because people are so conscious of how they treat their employees, and but also supporting local. And I think that's a nice thing to come from 2020, is that we are more community focused. And I just love to see that attitude carrying through in other realms within technology. We are slightly up against the clock, but let's talk briefly about FIFA 21.
Yeah, so it launched last week. So it's the annual kind of installation of the kind of the FIFA franchise on consoles. Always a kind of a big winner, always popular with the football fans. It's one of those games that they just buy once a year and nothing else. We're currently working on our own review on the website, and you know, speaking to my colleague who's working through it, he's saying, "Yeah, it's a great title, but it's pretty incremental over last year's version." So you can tell you're coming to the end of a console cycle with the new consoles launching next month. So it's you know, the diehard fans are always going to buy it, but I don't think you should expect absolute astonishingly groundbreaking changes from FIFA 20 if you're kind of coming up from just last year's version. So
why do they bother if it's nothing to write home about? Like, what, this is a completely stupid question, but what are the differences? Is it just new players, different stadiums? Like, how does it work? Why would anyone bother? Yeah, then
well, they'll claim quite a number of different facets have been upgraded, be it off the ball mannerisms by players. It's a lot of the things are to do with the licensing agreements that they can show certain clubs, certain arenas or football stadiums, certain teams through this year rather than last year. It's just very kind of, it's a sum of small changes rather than one big large change. So they'll tweak this or they'll tweak that. They'll add a little setting here or a little feature there. Like anything that comes out annually, there's only so much they can actually do. And as I said, the fact they're coming to 7 years to the end of the PS4, the Xbox One cycle, the graphics can't really be pushed much further until we jump up to the next gen console. So it's really, really only for the diehard fans that want to have the latest and greatest kind of stats for their players and kind of licensing kind of agreements to be able to play with their favorite player or whoever it may be.
Interesting. I think people would be up in arms if I didn't ask you any update or any extra availability on the new Xbox or new PlayStation models for pre-orders, because they did disappear into thin air as soon as they went on sale.
Yeah, well, I've been spotting that there was rumored kind of additional availability earlier on in the week. But I think that was more US based. So when it comes to the kind of the Irish UK market, I still think we're somewhat in the dark. In terms of when we can expect the next tranche of titles, particularly the PS5, obviously. I think the Xbox is slightly easier to get your hands on if you're looking for the new Xbox Series X or even the Series S. But yeah, obviously the PS5 was one of the most popular kind of consoles for this generation, coming up, that Irish gamers in particular are keen to get their hands on. So unfortunately, we haven't got any solid information just yet, but we'd like to think in the next week or so we're going to get another batch that will become available for pre-order through the main kind of channels, be it GameStop or even Argos or the likes of that.
And if someone does pre-order, are they guaranteed to be here before Christmas? Because that's where a lot of people's minds are focused now. We're being encouraged to try and get as much shopping as possible, get the Santa list done as early as possible. So if somebody has this on their wish list, are we guaranteed a Christmas arrival?
We aren't, unfortunately. I think, the biggest one would have been the case that happened with GameStop. They were taking pre-orders back in July before any availability dates were announced, just to get people on their books, for want of a better term. And I think they oversubscribed or took too many pre-order numbers than they were able to commit to. So there was a couple of annoyed tweets going around that people were getting emails from the brand saying, look, we unfortunately, due to an issue out of our control, that people are being told that they mightn't be able to get their console till 2021.
Oh my days.
So that was a really bad error on their behalf to just allow open pre-orders way too far in advance. Because we've been hearing throughout this summer and in the last couple of months that production quantities were going to be somewhat limited. But then Sony said they weren't. But the whole world and its mother are trying to get their hands on these new consoles. So the demand really is there. So I don't know. GameStop really dropped the ball on that one. So you might be better off looking elsewhere with the likes of Smiths, Argos, maybe some online retailers, maybe Amazon might be able to sort people out. But yeah, I think GameStop might have really messed up here.
Oh dear. Right. Well, look, we will keep you up to date with availability if and when it becomes available. John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, thank you so much for joining us here on News Talk.
Thanks, Jess.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address if you'd like to get in touch, or you'll find me on Twitter at JessKellyNT. And we're going to talk podcasting now. You may well be listening to this as a podcast that you may have accessed via the News Talk app or iTunes or Pocket Casts or wherever you get your podcasts from. But have you ever wanted to do your own podcast? Maybe you have a brilliant idea or a story that you're only dying to tell. Well, my next guest has co-authored a new ebook with a step-by-step guide of how to host a podcast like a radio presenter. He has many, many years experience as a radio presenter, and I'm delighted to have him back on the show, Stephen Cooper. Stephen, welcome back to the show. It's been a while since we spoke. I think the last time we were on, we were talking about, you know, headphones, equipment, that kind of stuff. And we're sticking kind of with that theme, but in a different realm, because podcasting has taken off here in Ireland. It's been a little bit slow to pick up. It was huge in the US, and bit by bit, we're getting there. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It seems to be getting massive, because we know like how successful podcasts have been, like even your own Tech Talk podcast. It's become massive. And I think people have their favorite podcasts, and they tend to talk about it the way they talk about what happened on TV last night. And I think there seems to be more podcasts, especially Irish Roots podcasts, that people are able to relate to, like the likes of whether it's News Talk podcast or the Two Johnnies, or Baz Ashwami has just started a podcast. I think there seems to be more subjects in Ireland that people are able to relate to.
Because we know that Irish people love radio, and we love radio personalities, and there's that element of kind of friendship, you know what I mean? Like you get to know the people. And for me, podcasts, it's kind of like the Netflix of audio. You can kind of have it on demand whenever and wherever you want. And as you mentioned, we're seeing more and more of them creep up. But for someone who maybe thinks they have a podcast idea inside them, how easy is it to go from an idea on a post-it note into a production that suddenly thousands upon thousands of people can hear?
Well, I think it is a lot easier than people realize. And there's taking that first step. First off, you do need to have an idea of what you're going to talk about. And it mightn't be what everybody's into. It could be, you know, your hobby, which is collecting ribbons, or you have an obsession with umbrellas. Here's me looking around the room.
Say what you see, Stephen.
I love them. But there literally is podcasts about everything and every subject, be it gardening, be it technology, be it the latest style of banana holder that you use for your lunches. There is a podcast for everything. So it's easy to get into, because all you need to be able to do is speak into something that can record you. And there's so many platforms out there for you to be able to host your podcast on. And initially it can be free, but if you want to expand it, you need to pay for a service for them to be able to load more episodes on as you go on. But like, I think there is a podcast in everybody, because you have a story, expand on it, talk to people about it, and test it out with your friends as well.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And we all do have stories to tell. And I often, you know, I've worked in radio production for 10 or 11 years now. And anytime I'm talking to someone about a guest, if someone wants to pitch a guest, I always say, like, would I want to retell this story in the pub on a Friday evening back when the pubs are open? You know what I mean? That type of thing of having a good yarn, and whether it is a funny story, someone's, as you said, weird collection of ribbons. We're curious type of people, like we want to know. From a technical side though, and I know this is where your experience comes in, because not only are you a broadcaster, but you're also a DJ, so you know good equipment when you see it. Do you have to go out and spend an absolute fortune on kitting out your mum's utility room if you're going to try and dabble in podcasting?
No, absolutely not. So like, everybody has a smartphone these days, and you can use your phone to make audio notes. And you can actually, if you didn't know this, you can record into your audio notes, and you're able to email or transfer it to your laptop. So straight away, you have a tool in your hand or in your back pocket or in your bag that you're able to record into. You can spend 100 or 300 euro to get advanced, where you can get microphones and external sound cards and have that little setup. And if you want to, like, I know a lot of people, especially in radio, for when we were all locked down, everybody was broadcasting from home. So people were doing it in their cupboards to kind of get rid of that echoey sound. So you can use blankets and pillows around you to make it sound a little bit more professional. So to start off, to test out to see if this is the thing that you want to do, you can actually do it on your phone. It's as simple as that.
And I know you, as you mentioned at the top of the show, you have a new ebook that you've co-authored. Tell us a little bit, tell us what it's called and tell us a little bit about it and why you decided to put this together.
Okay, so it's called How to Podcast Like a Radio Presenter. It's co-written with a friend of mine called Shireen Langan. In fact, it was her idea. She approached me. She goes, I want to do this. Are you up for it? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. Why the hell not? We reckoned that there was a market out there for people who just want to podcast or improve on how they actually podcast. And we bring them through a step-by-step guide, literally like from recording audio, even down to how to edit audio on software, which is free to use, or you can buy software if you want to get a little bit more advanced, down to using the right microphones and headphones and all that technical side, which we love. And then there's down to interviews, how to approach people for interviews, there's interview techniques. And as you know as well, in Ireland, there's broadcast laws. So when you're doing a podcast in Ireland, you need to know the legalities of defamation and stuff. And all of that is covered down to what are the right sites that you can use to upload your podcast to. And it's so easy to do. In fact, we the first kind of editions of this book, we tested it out on friends to see could they were they able to do what we were teaching them to do, like edit something that they've spoken about and take a mistake out. Even my kids, who are 11 and 12 years old, were able to follow the instructions, and that's how easy it is. And if it's something that you want to do, or even have your business expand and have a podcast connected to your business to promote it, this is exactly the guide that you need.
I know, obviously, you've worked in radio for such a long time, and I mentioned you're an events DJ as well. Have you noticed a difference between live radio and podcasting? Because I know myself, you know, with the other show I'm doing at the moment, Embedded Tech in Town with Salesforce, that is primarily a podcast. And so I know I can have, you know, 40-minute interviews if I want. I don't have to worry about ad breaks. I don't have to worry about anything like that. And then I tailor it for the radio show. There is a great sense of freedom with podcasting that you don't actually have on radio.
Yeah, you nailed it. Like, radio can be quite restricted in your behavior, especially of what subjects you can cover and how you can talk about it. But with podcasting, the world is your oyster and what you can talk about, even down to the language that you use. If you want to have a rant, you can have a rant about it on podcasts once you put an explicit content on it. And it's great for people who are passionate about somebody and want to connect with like-minded people. So the difference is there's a lot more freedom on podcasts. Like you said, you can talk about something, be it for 7 minutes, be it for 10, be it for an hour. It's limitless. And nobody's your boss as well. Somebody can't come around and say, I didn't like the way you were talking about that. But you obviously have to understand, like we mentioned before, about defamatory laws and stuff. You can't defame somebody with our laws here. So it's a way of having fun and expressing yourself.
I know from having a quick look that you also tackle and address the issue of monetization, which is a tricky one. Because it's great having, you know, if you're doing a podcast as a hobby, that's fantastic. But if you want to make this into a business or even a side business, the monetization is important, but it's all about how you do it, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like you can't just like release a podcast and you've got, you know, just say you got lucky, you got 1,000 listeners. That's not going to initially start making money for you. You need to be able to prove and grow your audience. Like with radio, you need to grow your audience and keep your audience there. And there is way of monetizing. You can approach local businesses and contact them and say, listen, would you like to sponsor this episode because we're covering ribbons? So you're a manufacturer of ribbons. Would you like to cover it like umbrellas and stuff like that? You can approach local companies, especially if it's something of a subject that you're passionate about. But also some of the podcast hosting sites can actually take over the monetization for you. If they see that you're starting to trend and appear on Spotify playlists for podcasts, they're like, oh, here, hang on a second. They can actually sell the advertising for you. There's one of the different options that when you do go on and depend on what type of kind of program that you want to use, whether it's a free one or a paid for program on the podcast hosting sites. But if you can monetize it and make some money out of it, brilliant. Not everybody can. Like there's some podcasts in the States that they literally make a living from this, and they do tours, and they're very successful from it.
Do you think that that's viable, though? Because we know that we have big podcasting stars already here in Ireland, even though it's a young enough medium. But as you say, that they're few and far between. So everybody who, if everyone now listening to this decides to go and do a podcast, we're not all going to see them at number one in the iTunes chart. Sure, we're not.
No, unless you do something so unique and so spectacular, it's going to take a while for you to grow. But you can use your social media, and you can send press releases out that you've kind of found the next big thing. But getting to that number one position, it's hard. It's hard work. It's not going to happen overnight. But if it does, fantastic. Well done. Kudos to you.
From the equipment side of things, and the reason I come back to this is because there are some podcasts that I have enjoyed or appreciated the content, but I've had to unsubscribe because the sound quality is so poor. It kind of sounds like somebody talking through a tin of beans down a string from a toilet. The sound quality is important, isn't it?
It is. And like yourself, I've actually, there was a couple of, some of my favorite podcasts, I had to skip until they sorted out the sound. Well, I suppose maybe because we're audio nerds, maybe it doesn't matter to everybody. But if you can get a clean sounding, not sounding like you're in an echoey tin, like you mentioned, if you can make it sound really, really nice, you can do that with software anyway, by putting compression, which we explain in the book as well. It'll just make it sound so much more professional and more likely then to have people talk about you and get more subscribers to your podcast as well. But yeah, if you can get it sounding right, then that's, you're one step further than the other person who sounds like they're down a bin.
You have interviewed some of the biggest names in the world of entertainment over the last number of years. I know that as part of this new, how to podcast like a radio presenter offering, there's also a consultation side as well. So if people take the plunge, they start the podcast and then they want to go up a gear, there is that consultation service available as well.
Yeah, so with the website that we launched over the weekend, theworldmedialab.com, there'll obviously be links to buy the book, and we're going to be offering masterclasses and also coaching options as well. So if you are somebody who wants to get into podcasting, this is something that we're going to be doing, is masterclasses, and we can bring you through the whole book step by step and show you how to do these things, basically hold your hand through it, even though the book holds your hand anyway, but it's a human touch, it's a human without contact, obviously. We can help you through this as well. And I think as well for businesses who want to expand and talk about their products and stuff, I think they're mad if they don't have podcasts, because they're huge at the moment, and especially now that Spotify are like really killing it with all the podcasts. I think if you're not doing it, there's something wrong with your marketing team out there.
We should obviously mention at this stage that you can get all podcasts, not just Communicore podcasts, but up on the News Talk app or on the Go Loud app, as well as other platforms. Stephen, talk to me a little bit about the process of doing an ebook and why you decided to go down this route versus, extensive blog posts or multiple videos and so on.
I think the ebook because it's a guide, and if you're to do blog posts, is everybody going to see the blog posts with the way that algorithms work? And unless you get a subscriber, so if you get one person to subscribe to your blog post, it's only going to be that one person, and they might tell somebody else and they might look at one thing. But if we can get the whole ebook to somebody, that means that they have it. And they can come back and go forward to it instead of having to go off and go online and see somewhere else. It's on their device, it's on their computer, and they have it at hand at all times. We didn't go down the video tutorial route yet. That's going to be part of the masterclasses. And we didn't go for a print option either, because it's very expensive. Mm-hmm. And unless you have a publisher behind you, that's not going to really happen unless you've got a big backing. But because we're releasing this independently without a publisher, that's why that didn't happen. So
So the book, again, it's an ebook, and it's called How to Podcast Like a Radio Presenter. And give us the website again.
The website is theworldmedialab.com.
Stephen Cooper, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And that is all we have time for this week. If you missed any of the show, you can listen back in full up on newstalk.com. But don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on the Newstalk app in iTunes, Pocket Casts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. A quick reminder, I have another show that's running at the moment. It's called Embedded Tech in Town with thanks to Salesforce. It's looking back at 20 years of big tech here in Ireland. The final episode in the series is now available. You can search for that wherever you get your podcasts. All 6 episodes are there now. John Friday's up next here on News Talk from me, Jess Kelly. Take care.